Welcome everyone, thank you very much for making the effort to be here this evening. The purpose of tonight was to talk a little bit about team sleep and ADHD, because often the medication interrupts that, and to get a teen's perspective on what's going on this evening. I'd like Dr. Alison Bentley to introduce herself, and I'll get Peter to introduce themselves, and then we'll talk a little bit around where we're going to go this evening.
I'm Dr. Alison Bentley. I'm a GP by training, but I've only ever done sleep medicine. So I see patients from 6 months old to 98 or wherever the end is, and all kinds of sleep disorders. So I see patients with insomnia and sleep apnea and restless legs. I'm very aware that people don't know enough about sleep disorders, and people tend to put a lot of things down to other problems, without thinking about sleep. Particular interest in children's sleep, because I think children get diagnosed with other disorders without a single question about their sleep, and looking at how sleep interacts with other disorders. And we've done a couple of chats.
Yes, so we wanted the voice of have the kids have a voice in this conversation, and also get some questions from parents. Peter, who are you?
Hello, everyone. My name is Peter. I am a student at Edu Inc. I am in grade 11, and I've been attending for 3 years. I was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 4 years old, and I've struggled with my sleep habit throughout all my life, really. I've seen therapists and many other psychologists for how to manage it, and I've gone to a pretty good space.
One of the things that is very difficult to get people to talk, especially teens, to talk about the sleep patterns, ADHD, is that, and even the parents, is that it's a profoundly personal journey. And we live in a space where social media and otherwise has created a place where people have very strong opinions about children taking medication, how parents have dealt with ADHD, and often it can be quite academic. But when you're a parent on the front lines, sometimes decisions need to get made to maintain relationships with your kids, to maintain a home, to make sure that other kids get attention as well. And there's often a reluctance to talk about this journey, and it can be quite emotional. I find it quite sad that people will judge other people's journeys and the decisions they make in the best interests of their children. No parent makes decisions about medication and how they manage this journey of ADHD with their children with ill intent. They do so with the best intent. So it's with that background that I'd like to say thank you very much for being here. Very brave of you to share this journey with us. So you've been torturing your mom since you were 4 years old?
4 years old, possibly even sooner than that.
Your mother looks a lot younger for somebody who's had a child of ADHD since 4 years old. Most parents should look like they're 100 at this point. And I'd like you to use this opportunity to quiz an expert on what's going on and just create dialogue about what's happening.
I've been a restless sleeper, very much either I can't fall asleep or I'll fall asleep, but it's very up and down during the night. So I'll wake up and I'll fall asleep. And I also tend to have very vivid dreams, which I'm not sure if it's common within ADHD people, but for me personally, that tends to happen. And oftentimes they can be very much feverish dreams, cold sweats during the night. But I've learned to combat that with certain methods such as exercising good sleep hygiene via not using your screens before bedtime, often winding down with your family, reading, things like that. I've also, over the time, I've gone and resorted to things that are rather not great, especially at my age, to resort to such as cannabis and alcohol. And in the long term, it does affect your relationships with your family, with your school, friends. It's a struggle for us kids with ADHD, especially on the meds that we're on. With our concertas and our Ritalins, they really much keep us awake.
Did you find any difference between the different medications? I mean, if you wouldn't mind, what have you found the easiest to sleep on? What's worked the best for you and why? And one of the things that we've spoken about at length is part of your inattentiveness the next day because you're tired, or is it because you're ADHD? You know, as the week goes on, I notice by Wednesday, Thursday in class, you're starting to be a little less energetic. There's a little bit more yawning in class.
It's definitely with the concerta that I do take. So it has quite a crash at the end of the day, and that builds up during the week. I'll take it in the morning, and it's long acting. So it will usually work within about, because I take it about 6 o'clock, and then by 7:30, it should be in full effect. But towards the end of the day, it will slowly start to wear off, and then there's just a massive drop. around 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock. That massive drop, it builds throughout the week. And then towards the end of the week, you start feeling groggy in the mornings when you wake up. And overall, it does impact your attention span 100%. It impacts your mood. I definitely become a bit of a grumper towards the end of the week. Yeah, just overall, with my experience on other medications, so I take multiple medications. They do all interact with one another. Sleep is a struggle for us kids on ADHD meds. It's hard. Sleep is, it's a struggle.
Tell me about the crash. I mean, you talk about the crash. What does that feel like?
The way I like to describe it, you're in a state of tunnel vision the okay. entire day. You can just look forward. There's okay. no relaxation. You're almost tense.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of the day, there's no calm down. It's just an instant drop, and your body feels tired. Your mind feels almost clouded a little bit.
Okay. Do you feel sleepy?
Not sleepy, but more dazed and kind of just out
just
of the
tired.
Zone. Yeah,
mm.
just tired. So just tired. Mentally, you're still mm. going, but physically, you feel very, very drained at the end of the day. Okay. And it's quite a change. With,
yeah.
It happens very quickly.
So tell me about the falling asleep issue. What does that feel like? So when you're battling to fall asleep, start with what time you go to bed.
I usually go to bed about 9:30, okay. 10-ish. That's usually
are you
the window.
Sleepy?
Yep. Towards then I'm sleepy. Before then, not really, but I usually ease into it.
Okay. So by 9:30, so you're sleepy?
Yep.
Go to bed. Either you will fall asleep or you won't.
Yep.
Okay. What happens when you don't fall asleep? What does that feel like?
My mind, it's kind of like there's a voice in my head and it just keeps going and going and going.
Okay.
Think about different things. It's like the way to describe it, imagine you have a little brother that just never stops talking.
Yeah.
It's like that. You
those
just
4-year-olds.
You can't get him to go mm. away.
So, and does the sleepiness then disappear? Do you find like you're not as sleepy then because
yeah,
you're more awake?
More awake. Yeah.
So you do this feeling sleepy, go to bed, don't feel sleepy anymore. Now I'm awake.
Yeah. And then it'll usually turn up to me getting up and making food, mm-hmm. Possibly putting on an audiobook or okay. something like that. And eventually it leads into me getting to sleep at about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Yeah.
That's quite a common thing that you do feel sleepy, but then it kind of goes away. So when we talk about sleep, and just so I'm going to give you some info as we go along. So when we talk about sleep, we talk about that sleep and awake should be like binary, like computers, 1-0. There shouldn't be a 1.5 anywhere.
No.
Okay. When they do collide, when you do fall asleep, there's this very clear sense that you have to switch off the accelerator, which is you being awake.
Yes.
You have to switch that off and put the brake on. Right. So that has to happen. And very often what happens is that the accelerator stays on and then you get that head.
Yep.
It just keeps running and you go like, actually now I could do that project because I'm like wide awake. But that's actually not what this time is for. This time is actually to be asleep. So there is that sense that you can get that. And a lot of people go, that's the meds. Okay. That's the meds that's keeping me awake. Well, the bottom line is if you have the crash, it can't be the meds anymore.
Yep.
Right. Because they've gone. All of those meds, whether they're the long-acting medication, the long-acting stimulants, work for about 8 hours.
Yes.
Okay. There's one that works for about 10 hours, but if you're taking it at 6 in the morning, it's gone by the time you go to bed.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not the meds. So then you have to go, why am I having this problem with falling asleep? Like why? And part of the problem is because sleep is an incredibly passive process. Falling asleep, you just got to be sleepy and you just have to let go. Abandon yourself to the forces of sleep.
Yeah.
Okay. And you have to do that. But if your head is running high and you're thinking a lot, it's very difficult to do that. And so what you're describing is what most patients with insomnia describe is that sense of being sleepy, switching the light off. And if you don't fall asleep fast enough, like the whole system revs up.
Yeah.
And then it's hard to go back to sleep. You don't feel sleepy anymore and your head is just running.
Yeah.
And you're awake. Okay. And then there is a sense that you're going to fall asleep a lot later. It's not the meds. That's the important thing. But then you also said, even if you do fall asleep, your sleep is not great
yep.
after that. Now, that's a different scenario, right?
So it isn't consistently not great. I'll have good nights and bad nights, but occasional nights I'll have it where I'll fall asleep at about 9:30 and I'll wake up at 12 and then I'll fall asleep again just fine. I'll wake up at 2.
Yes.
And it goes until like maybe 4 or 5 and then I'm up.
Yeah. So that's, again, something different.
Yeah.
Falling asleep is very clear that can be a problem because your head can be running high. There's also a couple of things of real sleep disorders that can stop you falling asleep as well. So one of those is restless leg syndrome.
Yeah.
Okay. Ever get a sense that you have an urge to move your legs, that you can't lie still, that you're uncomfortable?
Yes.
When you try to fall asleep?
And I've been like that all my life. My mom used to deal with it when I was in bed. She called me a kicker. That was her name for it. She would wake up with bruises on her legs.
Right.
Yeah.
So the question is, how many people have asked you that question in your journey?
Just you, Dr. Bentley.
That's my problem, because that is a sleep disorder. And restless leg syndrome, you know that if you're lying there and you can't get comfortable, you can't fall asleep, right? Okay, so restless legs is one of those things that is much more common in patients who have ADHD, like double the prevalence that it is in people who don't have ADHD. So it's one of those things that unless you ask about it specifically, you aren't going to tell anybody because you don't think it's related.
Yeah.
More than that, if you've had it for as long as you can remember, you don't know it's abnormal.
Yeah,
because it's like who you are.
I think it's normal. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. And so, I mean, I've just come from a consult with a 17-year-old kid, same age as you, basically, who's got ADHD, who, again, I was the first person to ask him if he's got restless legs, and he does. And then his mom goes, oh, by the way, I also like do this with my feet when I fall asleep, kind of move them backwards and forwards. I thought that was just about, you know, soothing kind of thing. And I go, well, what happens if you stop moving them? And she goes, oh, no.
No, it doesn't work, no.
Don't ask me to do that, right? So that's restless leg syndrome, and restless leg syndrome will stop you falling asleep. Not every night, as you said, it's not every night, but it's there if you try to fall asleep and you are not sleepy enough to fall asleep quickly. Then you're lying there and it like creeps up on you.
Yes. You slowly start and then you're...
Slowly start and you go, oh no, it's coming,
My eyelids want to open.
And you kind of go, no, this is coming, this uncomfortable, I have to move position and I have to change here and I have to do the next thing. And then within 15 minutes, you're awake.
Yes.
So restless legs is really important. So that's falling asleep. The other big disorder that can stop you falling asleep is what we call delayed sleep phase syndrome, which is the most common disorder in young men your age. Every young person your age gets a shift of about an hour. So it just becomes a little harder to fall asleep. And you see it in your classmates. So you go from classes where kids are awake in the morning and they come to school and they're super cheerful to like over the course of a year, they come into school and everyone's grumpy.
Yeah.
Okay? You seen this? You see, if kids go to school by car, they go from being talkative in the car to being like...
completely dead.
Dead, yep. In the car, right? And then you come to school and then it's about first break, you suddenly go, oh, I feel a whole lot better.
Yeah.
Right? Like I've woken up.
You can also see it in the classmates around you. I mean, my friends as well at school here, they're usually quite dead until about 9:30 in the morning and then everybody's up.
Everyone's
cooking eggs.
Yes. Yep. And the interesting thing is they haven't had any more sleep. Right? So the sense is that you haven't had enough sleep. That is why you're sleepy. But they haven't had any more sleep, or half past nine, but they feel a whole lot better. And that's because of this little time zone shift. Like you just shift, like you're sleeping an hour into the Atlantic. Does that make sense? Like,
yes.
That side, right? It can get much worse than that. So you do know that during school holidays, and I'm not going to ask you to confess it because I just know it happens anyway, is that during school holidays, you kind of stay up late at night because you can, because it's super easy for you guys to stay awake late. So you stay up late and then your parents go, oh, shame, it's the holidays, like sleep until 10, 11 in the morning, right? And that sounds like a great plan. But then when school starts again, there are a group of you guys who don't come back into the right time zone.
No, your schedule's all...
schedule's all off, right?
Messed up. It's waking up on that first morning, especially in winter, and you're thinking, oh.
But what you'll find is that over that week of getting up early every morning, you'll get back into the right, going to sleep at the right time zone, except there's a bunch of your classmates who don't.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know them, that they can only fall asleep at 1-2 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
And they're also only waking up in second break. They're super grumpy in the morning. They're not hungry. They're hangry, very hangry.
No social interaction.
Do not speak to them. You just know not to speak to them, that they are the people that you speak to at 1 o'clock in the morning because they're still awake.
Yeah.
And that's delayed sleep phase syndrome, and that's pushed them. They're now much closer to New York than they are to South African time. Okay. So they're sleeping on that kind of time. And so their sleep is really short. And so obviously if their natural sleep has moved out into 2 o'clock in the morning, let's say that's where they can actually fall asleep, then trying to fall asleep at 10 o'clock is 4 hours too early. So it's equivalent to if your normal sleep time is 9, which it is, you trying to fall asleep at 5 in the afternoon.
Doesn't work.
It's not going to work, ever. They do try. So they're trying to go to sleep at 10 o'clock and then really struggling because they can't fall asleep. So you can understand how that is a big cause of not being able to fall asleep at night. But what's different about that is that they're not sleepy. So they're going to bed at 10 o'clock because parents go, you need to go to bed, right? And they're going, but I'm not sleepy. Okay, and parents go, well, when you go to bed and you close your eyes, you'll get sleepy. But they don't.
No, they don't.
Okay, they just don't get sleepy, and they only get sleepy at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. That's the first time. So the conversation I have with them is, when do you actually feel sleepy? Like, not when your parents tell you to feel sleepy. When do you actually feel sleepy? So this young man I saw tonight, this afternoon, the first time he's really in a bad way. The first time he actually feels sleepy is at 7 o'clock in the morning. So he's awake the whole night, and he sleeps from 7 till 1 o'clock. That's where his sleep is right now. He's being homeschooled currently because that is not compatible with normal schooling. He's moved so far, but because he has restless legs, it's the restless legs that have pushed him out.
Yeah.
And they've just pushed him out consistently. So that's about falling asleep, right? So unlikely to be the drugs. Really important to know, are you sleepy at the right time? And if you are sleepy, what exactly is it that stops you falling asleep at that point? Because you should be able to, right? If you're not sleepy, that's also really important to know, because you might have this delay kind of sleep.
Yes.
That's falling asleep. Once you go to sleep, you said that you're a restless sleeper.
Yeah.
So are you that kid that no one wants to share a bed with?
We can say that, yeah.
We could say that. Okay, cool. Because you shouldn't be restless when you're asleep, right? You can be restless beforehand when you're awake. Can't get comfortable. This is too hot. It's too cold. This duvet, whatever. You can be restless before you go to sleep.
One leg in, one leg out.
That.
All of that, yep.
Once you fall asleep, you should be good, right? You should lie there like the sarcophagus and sleep, right? That's what should happen. So if you're restless, then we kind of go, why are you restless? Something's going on, right, when you're asleep. That's where the big sleep disorders come in. The big sleep disorders are sleep apnea and leg movements. Related to restless legs, just looks a little different when you're asleep. So you're a kicker.
Yes.
Okay. That's leg movements. Okay.
So when I'm awake, not so much, definitely. I keep my legs moving.
Okay.
But when I'm asleep, that's mainly...
Well, that's because you can't move your legs. So what would happen if we didn't allow you to move your legs when you were awake? I do understand we'd have to avoid the punches and the swearing. I understand that. But if you were in that zone where you were restless and you needed to keep moving, and we said, keep your legs still, what would happen? Would you kick?
Yes, it would probably feel like claustrophobia to me.
Yeah, it does. It feels terrible. And your legs would kick. They would actually twitch like that, right? And that's what happens because you can't move them.
Yeah.
Because if you move them, you can get rid of that feeling.
Yes.
And you can stop the electrical activity from happening. But if you can't move them, then that electrical activity
builds. Yeah.
Yes. So it really feels like a flood that's coming, and then your legs are going to move.
You can feel them, then it jerks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that, right? So what does it feel like? What does the restless legs feel like?
It's almost like, I can describe it as when you get the chills, and then after the chills, you have to do that little shake.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do it. It's involuntary. Okay. That's how it feels to me.
So kids, and I have patients who are 8 and 9 years old who have it. So kids who have restless legs describe it as a Coca-Cola in their veins, like there's a popping, that their muscles are pulling and stretching on their own, that they have ants in their bones. And I have patients who describe it as a heavy feeling in their legs, cold, hot, pins and needles. It doesn't matter what the feeling is. What's important is that you got to move.
It's like someone's pulling a slingshot.
Yeah.
You just got to go.
Well, that's what's happening in the spinal cord, actually. That's what's happening in the spine. So the spinal cord, the electrical charge in the spinal cord is actually building up to a point where it gets to the point where those nerves fire, and then they fire. And then it's fine for a little while, and then it builds up again, and then it fires. So it's this little circuit that's going on in the spinal cord, if that makes sense to you.
Yes, yes,
like
yes.
That's what it feels like. It's building, it's got to be released, and then it's okay for a little while. So what you describe when you talk about restless legs is exactly what's actually happening behind the scenes. The important thing about restless legs is it is a full biological sleep disorder, and it's your parents' fault.
Thanks, Mom.
I know. Yeah. At least you can blame them for something, right? Legitimately, because it's very familial. It's very familial. So when we diagnose one person with restless legs, 60% chance that someone in the immediate family also has it. Very hereditary. So it's not like the pee thing. It's not like 25% of the kids are going to get it, okay?
Yeah.
It's much more vague than that. But we can usually find one person in each generation who has it. There's having restless legs, and then there's having it mild, moderate, or severe. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah.
So some people go, no, it's fine, because if I just walk around before I go to bed, so just the process of going to the bathroom, brushing teeth, going to the toilet, coming back, putting on pajamas, and because when I go to bed, I just put my head down, I'm asleep in 30 seconds.
It's a small routine almost.
I don't even know I have it, because you don't feel it during that walking. But if you have any difficulty in falling asleep, that's when you're going to feel it. And parents will say, wow, I have it like once every so often. I go, but you have it. You have it, right? You just don't feel it often. But your kid has it badly.
Okay? They feel it all the time.
They feel it all the time, right? Because there are multiple reasons why you might have difficulty sleeping. So you might get stressed for an exam. On that night, you're going to feel it. Then it becomes a thing that you dread. Okay, like you go to sleep and you go, I hope it doesn't happen tonight.
Yeah,
because I hope the restless legs doesn't happen. And just that little bit of anxiety about it is going to keep you awake.
It's going to spot.
So that it happens. Does that make sense? So it happens because you're staying awake for long enough. Now, does anyone tell you you snore?
I haven't been told, but other than my sister, but I don't think I do.
Sisters. Oh, my God. Sisters will
snores.
Tell you everything.
My mom snores. No, we're not talking about your parents.
We're not talking about your parents here. So your mom can snore, but you haven't been told you snore, because that's the other big sleep disorder. And it's kind of interesting because in my generation, we had three like tonsillitis episodes, and our parents said, get those damn tonsils out, right? Tonsils came out really quickly, and now they don't, because we've realized they actually do have a function. Yeah. Maybe we shouldn't whip them out so quickly. But because they're still left in, the main reason to take tonsils and adenoids out is because they're obstructing your airway, like you can't breathe properly, right, at night. Particularly. What we haven't done is quiz every kid, like, do they snore? Does that make sense? So we've dropped the ball to find the actual reason why we need to take them out. So sleep apnea does the same thing as the kicks do at night. So if you kick at night, it kind of destroys the quality of your sleep. If you have sleep apnea, it destroys the quality of your sleep. And so that's the reason, and it's never a good idea that kids sleep for 8 hours and wake up feeling like they haven't slept. Like, that's never good.
No,
right. So that's what we want to look for. But unfortunately, what happens is, particularly in teenagers, they go, it's a sleepy teenager.
It doesn't matter.
Like, they're just all like that.
He'll grow out of it.
He'll grow out of it, or it's the screens, or exactly. And so we don't look at that as being an important thing. But if you have kids who are sleeping in class, who are super sleepy, or who are tired, if they have to sit still for any long period of time, and they've slept 8 hours, they kind of go, I don't understand. I've had the sleep. But I'm sleepy during the day.
Yeah, you still feel that
sleep inertia. Yes. So you describe it as being able to go to sleep at 9:30, actually sleep through the night, wake up a couple of times, but go back to sleep. Yeah. So if you look at the hours that you've had to sleep, it's kind of normal.
Yeah, it kind of adds up six to eight, right?
Yeah. And then you kind of go, but I don't understand why I'm still tired. So it's that disconnect that we look for, that you kind of go, I should feel okay, but I don't. That's when we go, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have two reasons not to function well during the day, and that is sometimes difficult to fall asleep. So there's some nights, there's some days, he doesn't know it, there's some days you're functioning on 4.5 hours of sleep. And then even when you do sleep, your sleep is not great.
Yeah.
So you're a sleepy kid.
I'm a sleepy kid.
Does that give you some information?
Yeah, 100% it does. It's very informative. I'm thinking about some ideas tonight.
So the most important idea is you need to be treated for your restless legs.
Yeah.
That is the most important thing, because it is a biological disorder. And the treatment works beautifully. Okay, so if we put you on treatment for restless legs, then the legs will stop. And I'm going to tell you that's going to be the weird bit. Okay, because you're used to your legs. But what I'm going to do is give you medication to stop that restlessness.
Yeah.
And then you're going to go, that feels weird, right? Because I'm so used to my legs and now there's nothing. They're normal. They're not going to be like paralyzed or anything.
Right.
But they're just going to be normal, except you've never experienced normal. You've experienced normal during the day, because restless legs is a night thing, right? So you've experienced normal during the day, but how your legs feel at night, you've come to understand that is normal. And so there is really good treatment for restless legs. It treats the restless legs part of it so that you can fall asleep easily, but it also stops the kicking at night so you can sleep properly at night.
Is it possible to become dependent on those pills?
No.
Because eventually, once you get to a point where I don't have to take all of my meds, I want to become an independent person. So just a question I had.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because it's not a sleeping tablet. Even then, it's really important to understand the relationship between medication and disorders.
Yeah.
If you have insomnia and you take a sleeping tablet and you sleep well on that sleeping tablet and you function well during the day, you are not addicted. You are as dependent as every other person is on every medication they take. So nobody shames a diabetic because they need to take insulin, right? But apparently if you take a sleeping tablet, that's another. It's a really tricky, tricky relationship. There's no question that addicts take sleeping tablets. They do. They take tons of them. Partly to dull down the effect of whatever they are actually taking. So they get too high too quickly. So they take it with a sleeping tablet, so it just gives them a bit of a high. So they do take a lot of sleeping tablets, but your average person who takes sleeping tablets is not an addict. This medication is different. So this medication is actually a medication for pain, but a specific type of pain. So there's two different types of pain. So you're going to learn all about pain tonight as well, even if you didn't want to. The pain we remember is the pain receptors, you know, that, and you take anti-inflammatories and you take codeine and you take those kind of things for that kind of pain. But there's a type of pain that gets created within the nervous system itself. So for example, if you slip a disc and the disc comes out and hits the spinal cord like that, no, super painful.
Yeah.
There's not a single pain receptor there except in the muscles. Okay, but in the spinal cord and the brain, there's no pain receptors. I'm sure you've seen those cool videos of people doing surgery on the brain when people are awake. Yeah, yeah. So there are no pain receptors in the brain itself and or in the spinal cord. So if the brain is perceiving pain because the nerves are overactive, that's why the pain is being created. So it's not a pain receptor thing, doesn't respond to anti-inflammatories, doesn't respond to the usual pain stuff, but it responds to these particular compounds. Yeah. These compounds are designed to take a hyperactive part of the nervous system and calm it down. It's not going to take normal and make it dull. It's just going to take hyperactive and make it normal. Pull the system down a bit. So it's getting it down to a state of normal. And so we use these medications, and these are aimed at the spinal cord, where the spinal cord is hyperactive, doing this little circuit, ping, ping, and say, shh, calm down. Okay. So it calms down, and so the legs stop. If the legs stop, your natural sleep can happen. Does that make sense? So you don't need to take something for sleep, because the natural sleep should be able to happen. You're doing everything right as far as the sleep hygiene is concerned.
Yeah.
But if you have restless legs, it kind of doesn't work. You cannot beat restless legs. I mean, if it's there, it's a neurological thing. You can't beat it. But if you treat it, then all the sleep hygiene stuff works. So yes, it is important that once you know when bedtime is and you're going to be sleepy then, it is important for that half an hour beforehand that you get ready for bed.
100%.
Right. You cannot study till 14 minutes past 9 and expect to sleep at 15 minutes past 9.
Your brain's still active. You're still...
Exactly.
The hamster in your head's still spinning.
You need to calm that down. Yep. So we calm that down by reading, by listening to audiobooks, by distracting your head from what you were doing beforehand. For teenagers, we spoke about that delayed sleep phase thing, that your sleep can get a little bit later. Part of the reason that happens is because you falling asleep, your ability to fall asleep at a certain time depends on melatonin. So I'm sure you've heard of melatonin.
Yes, the hormone in your brain.
That's it. You make it in your brain, but only in dim light. Okay, so when night comes in and there's dim light, you start making melatonin. About an hour and a half after you've started your melatonin, kind of shoots up in this peak thing, like a little mountain. And then about an hour and a half later, you start to get super sleepy. Now, the whole point about sleep hygiene, and especially the screens issue, is that if you're exposed to light in your face, like on a screen here. So when I was a kid, the screen was yonder, right, in the room. There was the only screen that there was. But with cell phones and particularly smartphones, the screen is now much closer. So if you have enough light, and I don't know what enough is, it's different for different people, but if you have a lot of light here and you don't see the dim light, then you don't have the dim light.
It eats at your melatonin.
Well, you just don't make it because there isn't dim light. There's light, right? So the melatonin doesn't get made until there's dim light.
So your brain's being tricked into thinking it's daytime.
Exactly. And then if the first dim light it has is when you switch off the light, then guess what? Guess when you're going to feel sleepy?
About an hour and a half later.
About an hour and a half later, because that's when you start making melatonin, and then you've got that hour and a half lying awake. That's why we're kind of on a bit of a mission with screens with teenagers, because it's really easy for your sleep to shift, and we don't want it to shift because you're on your screens. I know life is important. I know social media is important, but really, okay?
Sleep is more important.
Sleep is more important. Thank you. From the man. Sleep is more important. And I do have this conversation, and I have a conversation with teenagers often about this issue about phones, and they go, but. And if I'm really getting to the end of my tether on this argument, I go, are you a paramedic? Are you on call? No, switch off the damn phone.
In the end, you need sleep.
Yeah, you do. And the phone has an off switch for a reason. You can actually switch it off. Because what happens is you leave the phone on, and then it goes ping, ping, ping through the night. Like, really? You're not a paramedic. You're not on call. Like, try sleep.
One thing I've been told, I don't know how accurate it is, but it's what kind of makes me look forward to going to sleep at night, is I was told when you go to sleep, when your dreams happen, it's during the stage where your conscious and your subconscious kind of interlap, So it's when your brain stores your memories throughout the day. And that's often why you'll have random things happen in your dreams.
So dreams are cool. So they happen during REM sleep.
Yeah.
Okay. Now REM sleep is a really interesting form of sleep. It's my favorite type of sleep. I don't know why. When I see it on the screen, I just go, oh, look, there's REM. It's lovely. So it's a very particular kind of sleep, and a couple of things happen that don't happen during other stages of sleep. So firstly, your eyes move rapidly.
Yeah,
That's where the name comes from. Not sure why though. We're not sure why that happens. Some theories, but not sure why. But then your body is paralyzed. So during sleep anyway, your body is relaxed, right? But during REM sleep, it's paralyzed. So you literally take the brain and you can go, you can do whatever you like. There are no consequences. Okay, because you can't move. Right. And so there are no consequences. And so the brain can think and it can get creative. We know that you get super creative in REM sleep. And and your dreams happen. And the good news is you can't act out your dreams. Really good news. If you think about your last dream, you go, thank goodness I didn't do that.
Well, I would have jumped off out of my window, guys.
So there is a sleep disorder called REM behavior disorder, usually in older men, where the little part of the brain which paralyzes you during REM sleep starts malfunctioning. What happens then is they act out their dreams. So I know that a patient has REM behavior disorder as they walk in the room because they have a cut here or a broken collarbone or something. And I say, how did that happen? And they go, so I was asleep and dreaming I was playing rugby, except I tackled the chest of drawers. Yeah. And so they act out their dreams. Unfortunately, they shouldn't be acting out their dreams. No. So it's a bit of a problem.
It's dangerous.
It's particularly dangerous if you're the bed partner and they think that you're the person who's attacking them. That's a bit problematic because you're like fast asleep and suddenly you get attacked. So that's how we know kind of how this whole thing connects together. So for example, if you think about your nightmares, okay, if you have a nightmare, there's always an escape. You need to escape.
Yeah.
And you can't. Problem with a nightmare is you need to escape from whatever situation it is, can be anything, but you need to escape and you can't. And you can't because when the brain goes, run, 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 the body goes, hey, I'd love to,
but I can't.
But I can't.
Yes, you're stuck.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that comes into the dream and that's where you get stuck. The theories about dreams are from subconscious. That's the Freud kind of thing that it's your subconscious speaking to your conscious.
Yeah.
Right on the other end of the theory of dreams, and there's a whole bunch, you know, but right on the other end is the sense that what is happening is not a kind of thought process, but it's literally, there's a lot of memory retention that happens during dreams, right? That's when you store your memories, you hardwire your memories. And there's a sense that what your brain does is go into this filing cabinet, okay, and go, where does this memory fit? Okay, like, let's pull this one out, let's pull it. No, it doesn't fit here. Is this about the dad and the skate park and how? So there's all of these random things coming up as the brain is trying to figure out where to file it. So it's kind of like just opening the computer, and that's why you get random stuff happening. So the theory of dreams is different. What is really important is that you shouldn't be waking up often in your dreams. So patients will say to me, I'm exhausted during the day when I wake up in the morning because I had like 5 dreams last night. Like, that's abnormal. What that means is you're being woken up a lot, because if you don't wake up in your dreams, you don't remember them. So we know roughly if you're in REM sleep or dreaming sleep, that about 80% of the time you're dreaming, which means that if you woke people up in REM sleep, most of the time they'd experience dreams. So the most interesting dreams are the soap opera dreams. So we start with a dream here and we go back to sleep and we have the next episode.
Oh, that's true.
Then we go back to sleep and we have the next episode.
They follow along each other.
Yeah. And it's just the story that happens during the night, but it's abnormal. You shouldn't be dreaming that much. REM sleep, this REM sleep is so interesting because of everything that happens in the background. So we kind of think of it as the repair place of the brain. Like, that's what's happening during REM sleep, is your brain is sorting itself out so that in the morning you're like, ta-da!
I know you've
never felt like that.
No.
Ta-da! That's
imagine
what we want you to feel like.
I always feel like,
ta-da!
No, I go, oh, I gotta wake up.
Any other questions about sleep? Seeing as I'm sitting right here. Did you learn
That's
something?
Me. I did indeed. Thank you very much.
So first we need to speak to Peter's mom.
Thanks very much, doctor.
It's a pleasure.
So one of the things that you said was very interesting to me, and that was the tie between the ADHD meds and sleep. If I go back to when Peter was little, he was always a restless sleeper right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. So from being a baby, would wake up every sort of hour, unless he was lying on somebody and he had warmth and weight, then he could go for 3-4 hours. And even to the point when he would sleep in the night and he'd started walking, we would find him in the morning where he'd walked from his cot or his bed, and he'd actually walk down the passageway to our room, and then he'd kind of conk out outside the door, lying on the floor. So he's always been a restless sleeper, even before the meds came into play. So, you know, that to me is really interesting, because I think
that's really important, because that is something that I look at when I'm seeing kids. They go, well, maybe it's the meds. And I go, when was the first time that you remember? And were you on meds at that time? And they often go, no, I wasn't on meds, actually. I think a lot gets blamed on the meds. Generally, that's what people will say. What's interesting is you also said that the weight and lying on somebody. So the thing about restless legs is it runs in the pain pathways. So it's a kind of pain. It's a subclinical pain. When you get pain, you tend to rub that area. And so it's what you activate, what we call the gate theory in the spinal cord. Like, you can stop the pain thing getting through to the brain if you push enough other sensation through it. So what kids with restless legs often do, if they share a bed with parents, is they put their feet under parents, under the legs, because they can feel that weight. And that pressure stops them feeling the restless legs. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So a lot of patients massage their legs and they put hot and cold. So they'll go walk on cold tiles, or they put hot water bottles on their feet to try and change that sensation, because what the other sensation is much better than the restless legs. As he describes, it's intolerable. It really is horrible to feel. So does that ring true for you?
It does. It absolutely does. And the other thing that he's always done as well is sort of this little feet jiggle, where he'll rub his feet together like this.
Across. Yeah.
And across. And he does it during sleep.
Yeah. So that's not normal. And you don't know that unless somebody like me says, that's not normal. Because you kind of go, that's just what he does.
Let's say that Peter gets treated for the restless leg so that he is sleeping better. And what it feels like for him to have a good night's sleep and to be rested and attentive during the day, if that allows some of his meds to be reduced for the ADHD, because how much of the inattentiveness is he's legitimately got ADHD, but also to what degree is it stimulated more because he's sleep deprived, as it were. So it'll be interesting to see where that journey goes. And the good news is that Peter's old enough to start actually realizing what that looks and feels like, because he's articulating very well what's going on in his body, and it's good to be able to do that.
Yeah, I'm certainly not disputing the fact that ADHD exists. I'm not. I'm not saying that every kid with ADHD has a sleep disorder. I'm not saying that, because ADHD is a thing. But what happens is the sleep disorder exaggerates the symptoms of ADHD during the day. And so I have a bunch of patients, adults as well, who are on a lot of ADHD medication during the day. And then when we look at their sleep and we go, actually, there's a sleep problem here, and we treat that, then there's less ADHD medication. Because I can tell you that if you are trying to treat a sleep disorder, the symptoms of a sleep disorder, with the methylphenidates and the Ritalins, etc., you're going to lose, because the doses have to be really, really high to do that. Whereas if you treat that, then this becomes manageable. So it's not about taking away the ADHD completely. I mean, it would be great if we did that. But I'm just saying it's not necessarily about that. It's about taking away something that should be treated differently.
Yes.
And then using a smaller amount, because as you said, you kind of want to get off the meds. But even pulling back on the meds, and you go, actually, now they work a whole lot better, and I feel more in control, because there's not this crash at the end of the day. Because part of that crash, I think, is the fact that you've got the sleep pressure. You're in sleep debt when you start the day. You're not slept well. The concerto's hiding that for the day, and then it comes back with a vengeance.
And it comes back very strong. Yeah.
What happens with your sleep debt over the weekend?
As of recent, I don't take my concerto on the weekend because I'm old enough now to manage myself in a way where I don't need it. As for whether I sleep longer or if I sleep later, it genuinely stays the same. I'm usually, my sleep routine for school and for weekends is relatively the same. If anything, I'll have maybe an extra hour or hour and a half on the weekends, but I'm usually up by 7 o'clock on the weekend.
So that's a whole one sleep cycle more that you have.
Yeah.
But it's also where this disconnect comes, where you kind of go, even if I don't take the meds,
I still have the sleep problem.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's a really important thing to kind of go, it's not about the meds. And I think the meds get blamed too much for the sleep disorders, in that it's kind of just go, oh, it's the meds. But we're gaining so much by being on the meds that we're prepared to, like, put up with that.
Sacrifice our sleep, yeah.
Put up with that. But it may not be the meds. And that's another thing. We've got to go, maybe it's not the meds.
Any takeouts for you specifically? Anything ringing true for you?
I've always thought that the meds have played a big, big role, or the role,
yes,
in his insomnia problems and getting to sleep. And I think it's been an eye-opener for me tonight to understand that that isn't the case. And we've consulted various medical professionals over the years, never sleep specialists, but, you know, various therapists, various psychiatrists, and no one has ever explored this or pointed this restless leg syndrome out to us. So, you know, it's actually a little bit frightening that we get to this point where we just happen to be here tonight participating and this comes to the fore.
This is exactly why we're doing these fireside chats. I think in the last one we had a discussion around the fact that a third of your life is about sleep. And we teach nutrition, we teach exercise, good healthy habits during the day, but there is no education around how important sleep actually is for your body, for your brain, for relationships, for your general mental state. Everything gets worse when you don't have sleep. Perhaps sleep is the thing.
It's the root cause of things. So, for example, we know that if you don't sleep, your risk of depression is much higher. Lifelong risk is much higher. Your immune system is compromised if you have sleep apnea. So we have really good data for sleep apnea that says because, and really it boils down to that what sleep is for is to service this car. And you should wake up in the morning fully serviced, like you're good to go, right? The full service has been complete. And if you underservice every single night, the car's going to break down. 30 years ago, we were having conversations about sleep apnea along the lines of, if we don't figure out how this kills you, no one's going to take it seriously. Well, now we know how it kills you, right? And people are still not taking it seriously. So we know that it's going, all of those big diseases, the diabetes, the cardiac disease, the atrial fibrillation, the depression, the dementia, the liver disease, all of those things that are going to happen, should happen in your late 60s, for example, are happening 10 years earlier because you're on this path of underservicing, 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 and something breaks. And it breaks sooner than it should because you're not servicing the car properly. So we have really good data for sleep apnea, but the same data applies to shift work, it applies to insomnia, it applies to restless legs, it applies to all of that, that you're running on empty and you're just getting emptier because every night you have the problem. You don't have a night off. And I mean, that's what you're describing, even off the concerto, like my sleep is the same. I don't know what's going to happen. Like maybe I'll fall asleep, maybe I won't, maybe I'll wake up feeling great, maybe I won't.
It's a bit of a gamble.
It's a gamble. Yes.
Just in terms of the medication, so we have been using melatonin up until now, and it does seem to make a difference.
You will generally feel sleepier on melatonin.
Yes, I'll take it just before I have my dinner, and towards by the time I'm 9 o'clock, it usually starts to, I usually definitely start to relax and feel a little bit more ready to sleep.
Yes. The data with ADHD and melatonin, like is there a biological problem with melatonin? There seems to be some problem, but we're not quite sure what it is. But often kids who have ADHD do sleep better on melatonin. And the main reason is because they feel a lot sleepier. So it stops the noise in the head, really. Yep. Like the sleepiness is exaggerated, and so it's easier to fall asleep. I mean, there's some disorders where melatonin is absolutely compromised. So over the age of 55, there's hardly any melatonin left. Blind people, if you can't tell the difference between light and dark, how do you get that melatonin surge when it's dark? Because you can't see the light and dark. So blind people, autism spectrum disorder, very good evidence that they have lower melatonins than they should have. So if you replace melatonin in those children, they sleep a whole lot better. Obviously jet lag and delayed sleep phase, those are all kind of compromised melatonin. So melatonin does work, but it's not a fix-all. I mean, you can't just throw melatonin at every kid and go, well, maybe that'll work. But it is useful to increase that sleepiness and to keep you on the right time zone. So it does stop the delay, that getting later and later at bedtime. So it definitely does.
So is that something you think we should continue with?
Peter's expressing that he would like to reduce the amount of medications. And so what we would hope that happens is that if his restless legs are treated and he kind of feels the sleepiness anyway and that he can fall asleep more naturally, that over time, we're talking weeks, that we could reduce the melatonin and kind of go, does he really need this? Or is he sleepy enough to be able to fall asleep if his legs are quiet? Okay, so if his legs are busy, he needs much more sleepiness to be able to override that. But now if his legs are quiet, maybe we can reduce the melatonin. It's a very safe drug, I mean, of all the drugs to take, because the melatonin we have here is melatonin. It's just pure melatonin. And it's very safe. You take between 2 and 5 milligrams of melatonin that night. They used it as an immune modulator during COVID to try and see if it would stop that cytokine storm. The one study that they did, they were using 30 milligrams a day with no side effects. So it's a very safe drug to use. And of all the drugs, it's probably the safest. But there are a lot of people it's not going to work in because that's not what they need.
The other thing that seems to give him discomfort is silence. Peter sleeps better if he has sort of a white noise in the background or an aircon running or a fan running.
Yeah, so sometimes that's a distraction because you can hear that and then the thoughts kind of slow down a little bit, so you can hear that. Sometimes it's to stop random noises so that you don't hear random noises, because there's nothing worse than just feeling like you're just about to fall asleep and then something, there's a noise like a phone rings or a hardy-da or a dog barks or something like that. And from the silence to that noise is too big a gap. Whereas if there's white noise, it kind of muffles it a little bit so you don't hear that. But if you have a problem falling asleep, which he does, you kind of look for what the fault is. And you kind of go, it's noise, it's light, it's this, it's that, it's the next thing. And so you're trying to find, I have patients who switch the fridge off at night because apparently that's too loud. And then the rage you feel about those little things is way out of context, way overboard.
If we're sleeping better, we know that sleep is under control, we're less anxious, we're less super sensitive to everything because we're not at our wit's end and frayed.
Yes. So it's not a bad thing. It's never having a white noise kind of thing is never a bad thing. But again, it's trying to solve a problem that can't be solved by that. And often we find that once your sleep gets better, all of those things go away because you don't need them anymore. And you find, oh, I don't need this, I don't need that. And so you start to trim down and go, right, this is what I need to be able to fall asleep.
I was wondering about the time zone sleep issue. Mm. So how do you treat that?
In my young man today, we're going to just keep him going through the day. But usually when it's sitting at around 2 o'clock in the morning, we use melatonin to move them back by an hour at a time. So it's a relatively slow process. It takes a week or so. So if it's 2 o'clock, then we go, right, let's make bedtime at one. So if bedtime is at one, then we give melatonin an hour and a half beforehand and quite a big dose and chew it so that, because it's prolonged release, chew it so it's fast release. So we get a big punch of melatonin. Have a very strict wake-up time in the morning, and in the morning, lots of light. So we do that for a couple of days, and then we go, once you're there, then we move you another hour, and then we move you another hour, and it works extremely well. However, it's a really strict routine, and we know what teenage boys are like with strict routines. Like, I really like that, and you have to do this. Like, you just have to get it done. Once you're in the right time zone, then we keep you on melatonin for a little bit longer, and hope you take it off and ban you from staying up late at night. And then you need to keep it there. So it's treatable. It's tricky to get it right. And often we get it right and then December holidays hit and then we're right there again and we have to do it again. So we often have to do it a couple of times. The good news is that work or varsity generally keeps them in the time zone after that. And having children is a dead cert to stop that drift. The problem with school is not the school. The school is keeping them on track. It's the holidays. That's the problem. Yeah. They adrift in the holidays, and then they've got to come back. So, I don't want to say you've got to wake up.
Don't try to take my holidays away.
I didn't know that was coming. It's not that. It's just don't let it go too far. So, yes, sleep in the holidays, but don't sleep till 11 every day.
Sleep until 7.
Till 7, or yes, do that. That's fine. So I think the message is to parents, I know you kind of want to let your kids have a good holiday, but there's a limit to sleeping in the morning because it can create a real problem, which then has to be treated deliberately. And if it's not, if you get stuck at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's not going to just kick itself back. You've got to treat it. I see patients in their 30s and 40s where it's never been treated and they still have it. Okay, and they're still complaining of insomnia. So that's the problem.
And what about teenagers and sleep? I mean, how many hours sleep do they need?
8 to 9 hours would be normal. I think the important thing is if he would sleep from, let's say, 11 till 11 every day. That's not normal, right? That's beyond normal. So then we would go, the quality's gone because you shouldn't need that amount of sleep. If it's a catch-up, then you kind of go, you're not sleeping enough during the week. That's what's happening there. And so it is important to catch up because what you can't do is be in debt all the time because the debt will just continue. So you do need to catch up. But the investigation is then what is happening during the week that you can't get enough sleep. Something's going on. And so we'd rather manage that, get you more sleep during the week so that you didn't need such a big catch up on the weekend. Because again, you may have found this, if you sleep till 11, it's really hard to go to sleep that night because you've slept too late. So the melatonin is the one force that gets you to sleep. The other force is how long you've been awake for. And you need to be awake for a long time so that you're super sleepy. So what you want to do is be awake for long enough, combine it with that melatonin all happening at the same time. that's the sweet spot to fall asleep.
Peter's mom spoke about the rubbing of the feet.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing it before bedtime compared to doing it during sleep time, mm-hmm. is there any stage where it's normal or is it all for a cause for concern?
So it can be normal. So there's people self-soothe. So if you look at babies who are sleeping, they will either suck a dummy or they'll rub a blanket. Do you know what I mean? So they'll want something soft or they want a teddy bear. And that's the way that they fall asleep. So it can be self-soothing. And so I don't want to say it's always abnormal. It can be self-soothing. I think the important thing is that if you see somebody doing it and you're concerned about it, you say to them, stop doing it. Now what happens in your head? Because if it's just self-soothing, they go, no, it's just hard to fall asleep unless I do that. But if they have restless legs, they go, please let me move. Like it feels awful. Like I have to move. That's different. So if it's that they have to move, then that fulfills what we call the diagnostic criteria for restless legs, which is an urge to move your legs. You have that urge. And you hide it because you move all the time. So if you move all the time, you don't feel it. And it becomes such a habit that you don't realize why you're doing it. So I also have patients who like jig their legs. You know how you just like bounce your leg? And they go, but isn't that like a symptom of anxiety or a symptom of ADHD? So I go, well, stop jiggling now. Stop jiggling now. And they stop and I go, what's happening in your head? And they're going, please let me move. Please let me move. I go, that's not anxiety. That's not ADHD. That's restless legs. Okay, it's different. So there's a different reason why you're doing it. And so that's what we would interrogate, is exactly why that's happening. There's also circumstantial evidence for restless legs, so if you're not clear about it. So it is about that, do you look for other sensations to try and be able to calm your legs down? So that pressure, that massage, that cold, that hot. What if I said to you, you're booked on an overnight flight and you're in the middle seat? Like, what goes through your head? And if you have restless legs, instant panic. Like, please don't make me do that. And I can tell you who has restless legs by being in a plane overnight. And I go, you all have restless legs. Why? Because you're walking around the plane at night. Why are you doing that? Why are you not sleeping? But they can't sit still. So they will always book an aisle seat so that they can get up and walk. Then there's things like sleeping with a pillow between your legs or sleeping with a duvet between your legs. Why? Because your legs are sensitive and them touching each other doesn't feel good. So we put something between the legs so that you can be able to fall asleep. Sleeping in strange positions. So kids sleep with their legs bent, their feet up the wall like that, because it feels better. You know, so they sleep in strange positions. Being able to sleep on a painkiller instead of a sleeping tablet. So a painkiller works better than a sleeping tablet. And that's codeine, which is in like the gen pain, still pains, those kind of painkillers, works for restless legs. And so papers will say, yeah, actually, if I take a gen pain, I sleep a whole lot better. Whereas if I try and take a sleeping tablet, that doesn't work. So those are all kinds of goes. That's not normal, is it, right, to have those kind of things happen? But they can be seen to be normal because people have always done that. And you go, just because you've always done it doesn't mean it's normal.
If you have restless legs, can you then sit down when they're gaming? Because when they're gaming, they're oblivious of their restless legs. Is that correct?
Yes, because you distract, because you get distracted. Yes. So that's one of the techniques that we sometimes teach patients who can't go on medication, we teach them to do, is to distract. So if you can get yourself distracted, and you may find this as well, like if you can focus on something else, then it's easier to fall asleep. So like counting sheep, that's what counting sheep is, distracting you from thinking about sleep. So if you can do that, the restless legs don't feel as bad. The longer you lie there, the worse you get, and then distraction doesn't work. So you're right, they do sit still. But if you look at them, they're often moving their legs. They're getting rid of the restless legs because they want to do the gaming. What they can't do is sit still and study.
Peter, Dr. Bentley, thank you very much. I think this was very informative.
Pleasure.
And I think it closes the loop very well, and very specifically on the conversations we've been having around sleep.
Mm.
Teenage sleep specifically, and how important sleep is. And I know it's your personal crusade to educate people as much as possible about sleep, given how important it is. And we thank you for your time once again.
Pleasure.
And thank you very much for our audience for participating and being part of this. It is valuable information, because an informed community is one that can make better decisions for our kids. We really appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bentley, and thank you very much, Mr. I appreciate the experience and the opportunity.
Thank you, everyone.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.